Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Each week, we talk about all things law enforcement, and we have a great guest or two. So this week, let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
It seems like each week, leadership in law enforcement just spazzes out everywhere. Some of the things I read are mind-boggling. And the first thing I'm going to talk about today is another dumbass law enforcement leadership move in the town of Minnesota, the city of Minnesota, I should say. So last week we talked about one of the other twin cities, St. Paul, where the boneheaded decision to appoint a three-time ex-felon for drugs and guns as the director of public safety for the city of St. Paul. Now, I've seen some dumbass decisions. Man, that's a beauty. That is a beauty. A guy who was a career criminal, gang member, they have now made him the director of public safety. Now, we go over to the other of the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and we have another great law enforcement leadership decision coming out of that bastion of liberalism. So here's what happens. The chief public defender of the city of Minneapolis goes to the mayor and says to the mayor, "Mayor, I am seeing a whole bunch of drug dealers being arrested for small amounts of dope, but, well, they're almost all black. So I think that there's something wrong here." And the mayor goes to the chief of police and tells him of her complaint. So do you know what their decision is? The chief comes out and does a press conference, and they decide this is the first time I've ever heard a police department actually do something which can only be interpreted as race-based policing. And that is, they've decided just not to arrest any more dope dealers because too many black males are being arrested. Yeah, you heard me right. I'm not even making this up. They decided, and the chief comes out with the mayor, who's clearly a fairly new police chief, and I had pretty great hopes for him, Madera Arredondo. But now this is like the second major thing he's done, which has shown he's got he's looks like he's just another tool of the Democratic government in Minneapolis. So they've decided that because too many black suspects were being arrested, they are not going to enforce that drug law any longer by arresting people. So I don't know. I guess I can't even imagine it. And instead of there being an outcry about it, it's just a whimper, just a little whimper. This is something crazy. This is a very dangerous road to go down. If you decide that you're not going to arrest people based on race, where do you draw the line with that little decision? This is a minor drug offenses. I mean, it's only dope dealing, right? Of course, we know that dope dealing, along with that, goes with guns and goes with other criminality. But if you're just not going to enforce the law anymore because it's mind-boggling. That is one of the boneheaded leadership decision that I wanted to talk about. I want to share a little something personal with you, and also something that I have a great deal of pride in. And what I'm talking about is my new book, The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People, is now ready for pre-order from Amazon.com. I got to tell you a little bit something about that book, why I did it. Many of you who follow me know that my past history, but there's some things you might not know. And the reason I retired from policing with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department is because I suffered a stroke in my police car. And the subsequent medical diagnosis was, let's say, grim. And at that time, I started thinking about my legacy and what would I be remembered for. And I happened to be watching an interview with an incredible man named Frank Shankwitz, the man who created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, when he was an Arizona trooper. And I saw this interview and said, I've got it. I want to meet him and talk to people like him about who their personal heroes were that inspired them to do the amazing works that they do for others. So I traveled the country and I talked to incredible people like Frank, like Gary Sinise, like people right in your backyard who you might not even know but who have touched the lives of so many people. That book changed my life. I think if you read it, it might change yours as well. It is a realization that heroes are among us and everyone can become a personal hero. So if you would, check it out on Amazon.com, look up The Power of Legacy or just look up my name, and I would love for you to read it and I would love for you to review it. So check it out, Amazon.com, The Power of Legacy, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Now there was also a very revealing incident that took place. And this took place in Athens Clark, Georgia. I think that I may have discussed this last week, but when a young police officer, still on probation, goes to arrest an individual. Now, once again, race plays a role here. So the officer is white. He sees an individual who he knows has a felony warrant, stops him. He's a pedestrian. And as he is getting ready to put the cuffs on him, the guy breaks and runs. So the officer jumps in his patrol car and tries to cut him off with the patrol car. And when he does that, he hits the curb and blows out one of his tires. And the guy gets around him, but the officer does the same thing, tries to get in front of him and block him. But when he does, because his car is screwed up now, the vehicle kind of veered and they came in contact with the suspect who was running. Now, when I say came in contact, it brushed against him, knocked him down, and the officer was able to get out and get him handcuffed. And this gets captured on video camera, on dash cam and body cam. The guy's not hurt. They take him to the hospital. He's got no injuries. But people immediately start criticizing this cop and saying that he purposefully ran him over. Now, the Georgia troopers did an investigation, and it was revealed that he didn't do it on purpose. His vehicle was damaged, and it brushed against the suspect. The chief, who signs his name with the letters PhD after it. His name is Scott Freeman. So he signed his name Scott Freeman, PhD. He took it upon himself to immediately fire the officer. His name is Salter. So even though the guy didn't do anything wrong, because this spineless punk of a police chief decided to ruin this young man's career instead of treating him like a normal human being, for political purposes, of course. The media just came down so hard on this young man, even though it was proven that the ruling was that he didn't do it on purpose. They are still doing articles claiming that he ran this suspect down, that he mowed him down. I mean, very, very inflammatory remarks. So last week, I think I talked about the fact that this officer is suing those publications for their lies, and I am such a huge proponent of that. But something else came out this week, and that is apparently the Athens, Georgia police officers, for very good reason, don't trust their chief. So he was trying to tell his side of the story to a group of officers. In other words, you know that everybody thinks this guy is a moron and have no respect for him. So one or two of the officers, apparently when they have discussions with their chief, they secretly record it. So that shows you how much trust they have in him. So in an attempt to smooth things over, the chief spoke to his officers about why he fired Officer Salters. Unfortunately for him, he contradicted his stated reasons for firing the officer, and now he got caught in his own lies. I got to tell you, this is a beauty. The chief gets caught lying. And, let me say this. If you lie as a police officer, generally speaking, you get fired. That's the end of your career. You get caught lying as a cop. So I think that this chief needs to go. That's right. This chief needs to go. And the only silver lining to this is that the officer, Salter, was immediately hired the next day by the county sheriff, who saw the injustice here. So the police chief fires a guy for doing nothing wrong for political purposes, and now he gets caught lying to his own cops. So let's hope that there is a little justice that comes out of this, because this guy, he needs to go. Now, while we are talking about leadership, there was actually some really good leadership shown this week as well. So there was a non-compliant suspect. Right? This is the old story, right? Once again, black suspect, white cops. They're arresting this guy. Somebody is taking a cell phone video of it, and the fight is on. And we've got women screaming at him. The guy's got an injured back. Well, the guy is fighting. Like he doesn't look like he's got any injuries to me. And he's fighting. And the cops are trying to get him down on the ground. And the people are screaming. And they eventually get him handcuffed. And they release this little snippet of video. And it comes out let me put it this way. The media says the video sparked outrage at this handling. Well, so all this criticism comes out, and you saw how that other police chief handled it. Well, this chief in Roseville did just the opposite. He came out. He did not hesitate one little bit. Came out publicly to back his officers, as well as calmly and professionally explain about police use of force and why what they did was justified. Now, this is exactly the way police chiefs need to act, and sheriffs, or law enforcement leadership, by explaining the reasons for police use of force, which is never pretty. That's the way you handle it. You don't throw your cops to the wolves. As long as it's a justifiable use of force, you explain it, you show it. And that's why, you know, these body cameras that cops are being forced to wear, you know, usually exonerates them of any wrongdoing. And that's what law enforcement leadership must do. They must back their police officers. Unless, of course, they're, you know, if they're wrong, they're wrong. And then they're accountable for it. So that's when I don't want you to think that I think that all police leaders are cowardly and that they are all politically motivated and they don't care about their cops. It's not true. I sometimes get a little bit emotional and verbal about those leaders that I think are administrative bullies or cowards. But in reality, just like the police, the majority of police leadership is guided by the right principles. So this here in Roseville was a really a good thing. Nice to see. Thanks, Chief. We appreciate that. So the other issue that you're going to hear a guest coming up on a show probably next week, and it's a really fascinating interview. So I'm just going to tantalize you just a little bit that the officer was arrested for murder on an officer-involved shooting. There was absolutely no evidence to back this charge up, and not only did he win, he is now suing the prosecutor and the investigator who not only prosecuted him, but brought forth fake evidence against him. So keep your eye on the dial here, and we'll see you again next week. Stand by for a great guest here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Now, if you're a police officer or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it. And this is really good stuff. And it's not, you don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And if it's only available at StinkyVest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com, and you can contact them, see their products, and it is worthwhile. To those men and women who are still active duty law enforcement, either as a law enforcement officer or in a support position, especially if you're a crime analyst, I don't know if you have heard of Analyst Notebook, but it's an amazing tool that's being used by police agencies all over this country, both large and small. It is an IBM product, but it's being sold and it's being supported by a pretty amazing company called Blue Light. Blue Light LLC. This is a company I had the owner on my show as an interviewee on the radio, because he is a retired Sergeant Major Green Berets, and they used this product to roll up terrorist networks in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's where this tool was beginning to be used, and then it was modified for law enforcement, and it does amazing stuff. I just got back from a conference in Denver where I interviewed people who have been using it, and I mean to tell you, if you are involved in any investigative process in law enforcement, you need to check this out. Go to bluelightllc.com. That's bluelightllc.com, and check for Analyst Notebook. It is amazing. The people at Blue Light are amazing, and you will not be sorry if you are in that capacity, because this will assist you in complex investigations, and it will also help your community. Check it out, bluelightllc.com.
Well, the Out and Out perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life. on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a woman whose ex-husband was a police officer in the city of Glenview, Illinois. He died shortly after a physical altercation. He was on duty. The Department of Justice has ruled it a line of duty death, but this city refuses. Here to tell her story is Kelly Masterson. Kelly, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, this is a very disturbing situation. First of all, your ex-husband, was a law enforcement officer in the city of Glenview for how long?
19 and a half years.
And you have a son, Michael.
Yes.
And how old is Michael now?
He will be 14 in July, in about a month.
Okay. Your ex-husband, Owen Masterson, died on December 5th, 2014.
The 6th, yes, December 6th.
Tell us about the incident, first of all, and then we'll go into what has transpired since then.
Well, it was the police department had a family Christmas party, so we were there. He had worked the night before, so, but he, you know, came in early for the party, so that way our son could see Santa Claus and receive a gift. And then right when the party was ending, because they ended it right between shifts so everybody could be there, he went into roll call, we left, and about 45 minutes later, he died. So about an hour or so after we got home, the police were at our door to let us know that he had passed away. Then they brought us to the hospital, and we were there till about 3 in the morning. And I wasn't aware that in the meantime, that word had gotten out, and the police department had already made their decision that it was not going to be a line of duty death. A sergeant who works at the police department who was not on duty or at the party actually made the decision on his own because Owen had just finished roll call when he had the heart attack and died. And that sergeant said that he didn't find it to be a situation that would be considered a line of duty death.
It was later determined that Owen had during the previous shift had a physical altercation with a suspect.
Yes, we only found that out a couple of weeks ago. We've been in litigation for about 3 years now with the police department and subpoenaed records and everything, and they never said that he had been in a physical altercation the night before. They had just mentioned that there was like a loud party that he had gone to that had several people there, and it was at a hotel, but never said there was anything physical that had happened. at all. We only found out about that after the U.S. Department of Justice did their own internal investigation.
That's a little shocking in and of itself. Now, you're the ex-wife. You were not married at the time. What was your relationship with Owen?
We lived like 4 minutes away from each other, saw each other every day, and spoke with each other every day. Our son would get on the bus at my house, get off the bus at his house, and then on his way to work, he would drop our son off at my office. And so we would talk about how things were going and whatnot. And then I would drive our son home, and then we would periodically text or call while he was on duty if anything was going on, discussing, you know, the family and what's going on, and not just our family, but his family, my family.
So basically, very an amiable relationship. That there was
Very much. Yeah, I had known him since I was 14 years old. We started dating just before I turned 16.
Well,
so we were both teenagers when we started dating.
Right, right. So there was still a deep friendship.
Yes, for sure.
When on the night of his death, when you were at the Christmas party, how did your son, who was, what was he, about 11 at the time?
He was 10 years old, yeah.
10 years old. How did he react when he learned about his dad's death?
Well, the police department had sent over two of our friends, one of which is a commander at the department, and a uniform, and a social worker. And so our friend's wife had come along, and she brought him up to his bedroom and said, oh, show me your toys, in order to separate us so they could let me know what happened. And then I went upstairs to let him know what happened, and he had guessed right away, and asked, is my daddy dead? And I said yes, and he ran past me into the bathroom and started banging his head on the bathtub as hard as he could, saying he wanted to die.
Oh, my goodness. Ugh.
Yeah, it was a pretty horrible experience that will never leave my memory. Since then, he has attempted suicide twice, just playing around with the idea of it, not actually following through with it. He's never been hospitalized, but he is on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication. He's physically, you know, anxious when he sees, you know, squads or an ambulance go by with their lights and sirens on, and is, you know, always asking questions about, you know, safety of being a police officer and whatnot. The school had asked me if I wanted to have him in an inpatient program for a while, but through a lot of therapy and a really good psychiatrist, he's starting to manage. And he's doing great at his new school. We actually changed schools a couple of times, and he's in a fantastic program and just thriving at that school. And we're actually now packing up our house because it's just too much living in the same house that, you know, all
with
three
all
of
those
us have
memories.
Lived.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
When your ex was killed or died, did the city keep his son on the insurance?
No, they told me, so that was December 6th, and then I had taken a month off of work in order to stay by my son's side, and they told me he had to come off of their health insurance by December 31st and had to go on to mine. And I was on family leave at the time, and I had no idea, and they said no, that they gave me about a week's notice to get him off of their insurance and said they were dropping him from their insurance since Owen was, you know, the provider and no longer on their insurance plan.
Now, if here's the issue. It all comes down to this. Someone in that police department made a determination that this was not a line of duty death. How did
Correct.
That come about?
I was told by the person who actually made that decision, because I was questioning it. I did not know about it for about a month or so until people said I should be reaching out to charities that could help me get my son into the right therapy programs he needs to be with kids that are from Leo families. So I reached out and they said no, that they were told that it wasn't a line of duty death, so he is being denied those benefits. They were sorry, but there was nothing they can do. And so I called that person who at the time had been in contact with me about paperwork for the insurance and paperwork for the pension, and wanted me to sign a bunch of papers. And I had said, who made this determination? You know, I don't understand. And he said if I wanted to be mad at anyone, to be mad at him, because he made that decision. He had called their pension attorney and asked, how do I determine this a line of duty or not line of duty, and was told if he was doing anything other than what a civilian would be doing normally, then it would be a line of duty death. But it's up to him to make that determination. And he told me flat out, all he was doing was sitting there taking effing notes.
That's what he told you?
That's what he said on the phone to me. And that was basically the last time I spoke with him.
Did you ever have any conversation with the chief of police?
The chief of police did actually offer condolences at the funeral. It was actually a full funeral with fire department and so many agencies sent people to represent. There were, you know, it looked like a full line of duty death funeral. The whole town was basically closed down, the streets and everything, so that the large procession can get through. And the chief had said to me that we need to sue them, and I didn't understand why.
The chief told you needed to sue the police department?
He said, reach out to me if you need anything. You need to bring legal action or sue. I forget the exact words because it was literally at the funeral. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was thinking workman's comp or something like that. I just thought it was a really strange thing to say to me, and I didn't understand why. But now I kind of understand why. But that's it. He has not done anything else. There's a liaison to our family from the police department who is a good friend of ours, and he's the one who actually did the death notification and had driven my son and I with his wife to the hospital. That's it. I don't have anybody else except for some longtime friends that'll call and see here and there what's going on and how we're doing. But otherwise, nobody from administration in any professional manner has called to see how our son is doing.
Right.
You know, or offered help. I have the FOP, the union, nothing. I've literally been going through and just researching everything online myself, which is how the Department of Justice got involved, because I was able to apply online.
So no one ever told you that there might be benefits, financial benefit due your son?
The liaison to our family and I sat down at his office and discussed it, and that's when I said, what's the difference between the two? And I found out the difference in what he would be getting paid with the pension, and that he should be getting scholarships for college, that he should be getting, they were supposed to, from what I understand, they were supposed to pay for the funeral. They did not. And then what they had done was the police officers themselves said that they wanted to pay for the luncheon afterwards. My sister-in-law had taken care of that because I was taking care of my son. But no, they did not. They put it together, but the funeral home did an outstanding job, and they were close with Owen because he worked midnights and was a larger guy, so he was able to help if there was a deceased person found, you know, help the people, bring him over to the funeral home. He was a bagpiper with the Emerald Society, so he had played a lot of the funerals at the funeral home as well. So there were so many different facets going on of people reaching out to offer help to my son and I, but nobody from the administration, from the police department, like the chief or the deputy chief, did anything.
That's pretty shocking.
You know,
pretty shocking.
Right. It was just the officers that we knew for 20 years.
Right.
From
now,
there.
Now, for just so that my listeners know a little bit more about how this has affected your family. If this had been considered a line of duty death, and based on the fact that he was in an altercation less than 24 hours before this, it should have been, as the Department of Justice has ruled, then the honor of your ex-husband's name being carved on the wall at the Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Washington, D.C., would have taken place. Because it was not told to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund by the city of Glenview, the town of Glenview, that name, your husband's name, is not on that wall.
Correct. Springfield and Washington, D.C. have a lot of paperwork I have to send in to them. One of the pages has to be signed by someone at the Village of Glenview at the police department acknowledging that it was a line of duty death.
And
so it's stopping my son from having any kind of legacy to go visit his father. And the Chicago Emerald Society, they actually sponsored it this year in Washington, D.C., that his dad had been in that band, and we didn't go because his name's not on the wall.
Of course not. And not only that, but Concerns of Police Survivors is an organization that assists families of the fallen with all kinds of programs that help in order to adjust, and you've been denied that as well because of this ruling.
Correct. They have an actual summer camp that my son could have gone to with other children of line-of-duty death officers, and it helps with grieving, and it's therapeutic, and it would have given me, you know, some time to get things in order here without him. I don't want to say without him being around, but he'd be in a healthy place with people watching him while I could get other things done that needed to get done, and he was not able to go to that. I had asked even if I could pay to have him go there, but it's only for line-of-duty death officers, for their children.
Right. And now that the Department of Justice has ruled in your favor that this was a line of duty death, and I have seen the public safety officer's benefits office claim determination, and it's very, very clear. And the determination is based on the information in the record, including the report submitted by the Village of Glenview Police Department, the claim for death benefits submitted by Kelly Masterson, mother and legal guardian of his son Michael Masterson, and a review by an independent medical examiner, this office has determined the death of patrol officer Owen Masterson is covered, and that this was a line of duty death. So it boggles my mind, and it offends me terribly that you are being given such the runaround and lack of respect by this police department's administration. And what are you currently doing to try and right this wrong?
Our next court date is July 16th, which happens to be my son's birthday, and that is to appeal the ruling that the Village of Glenview Pension Board, the Police Pension Board, had made to not make a decision. They've made a final decision to not have to change their decision to line of duty death, because in their eyes they state that since an officer is not married, and that the way they're interpreting the legislation is that if an officer is not married, there's nobody to give the death benefits to, and that it doesn't trickle down to the children or any other survivors. So they see no reason to change it. They will not even allow our medical professional to go on the stand because legally they would have to hire, from what I heard in the hearing, three different medical professionals to review the same items, and they do not want to pay for that. So we had 35 days to appeal, and thank God the Department of Justice got me the information 5 days before the deadline. So my attorney quickly appealed it, and now we just wait until that court date to see when they're going to do the next court dates. But in the meantime, according to my attorney's office, the Village of Glenview and the Police Department Pension Board has not even responded. No response whatsoever, no acknowledgement of the case moving forward. And when we had taken it originally to the Court of Claims of Illinois, they did not want to send anybody to represent the police department. They saw no reason to have them have to spend their time going down there.
Yeah, I'm very confused now. If it's a legal a court case, how do you just ignore it and not go? I've never heard of that.
I have no idea. They're very big on not wanting to set precedent, so which is what they actually said at the hearing, because the only reason the pension board, when I had signed the paperwork accepting pension funds on behalf of my son to be put into an account for him, they had said I can accept it at the 50% taxed amount without prejudice, that I could come back and appeal that at any time, because I had said this isn't right. And yes, he's going to need the money. Why should I leave it there when I can invest it for him? Why in the world would I, you know, not for how long? And the person who had made the decision, who had been trying to get me to sign the papers, when I told him, look, I'm going to sue you for this, I said, and it will take three, you know, plus years, according to people I've spoken to, you know, legally about it. And he said, there's no way I'm paying an attorney to handle this for 3 years. And I said, it's not your money, it's the village's. Like, and yeah, you will. So 3 years later, there's a new village president who caught wind of this. And he sent the village itself held a hearing, and it was their attorney, it was a three-ring circus, it was their attorney and representatives, the pension board and the pension board's attorney, and myself and my attorney. Because the village said they were not legally allowed to say without prejudice and to finish this already. And then the village attorney told the pension board that they need to remember who funds the pension, that the village puts a lot of money into that pension, and to keep that in mind when making their decision.
So in other words, they tried to intimidate them into deciding against you.
Correct. Very much so. Their attorney was probably the rudest person I've dealt with. The pension board attorney said that since there is not a case in the books anywhere that is like this, he could advise the pension board to make it a line of duty death, but that would be setting national precedent, and he didn't feel like doing that at this time with this case.
So now it's going to have to be decided by a court, is really where this
correct,
stands.
Correct, because the five people on the pension board voted 3-2, not even unanimously, 3-2, to not move forward and have additional medical professionals and attorneys look at this to see if they made the wrong decision.
Right.
And the person who originally made the decision actually voted on our behalf to continue with the hearing and to have this taken through higher courts.
In reality, though, although there's some money on the table here as far as the difference between the line of duty death benefit pension payout to your son, what you really want out of this is the respect and the acknowledgement that your husband, your ex-husband, died in the line of duty, and to have his name on the wall.
Exactly, that he worked midnights for 15 years, and that he was switched to a 12-hour midnight shift for the last, I think, 3 years or so, and that nobody in the department is going to ever be recognized as a line of duty death if they were not married. I don't want any family to have to go through what I have gone through. Starting even with, nobody should have to be told that the father or mother of their children has died, much less while on duty, and then have insult to it saying, but it wasn't a dramatic enough death to be a line of duty death. And then for the village to say, we don't want to pay for your kid to be on our health insurance until he's 18. He only gets these benefits until he's 18. If Owen continued working, he would have stayed working until he was retirement age, 60 years old, say. He was a cop's cop. That's what he was. That's what he's always wanted, had always wanted to be. It would have cost them so much more money. But no, we're going to just deny this, and the fact that other, you know, I wouldn't have to pay for college. So I'm not worried about that because I have a smart kid and hopefully he can get a scholarship.
Well, you know what this really comes down to, though, Kelly, and why I find this so disturbing is your son is being victimized by this police agency's administration and by your city's administration. That's really when you bring it right down to the core of the issue, is your son is the victim here. And this is unjust.
100%.
I can tell you this. I mean, I know that you're fighting, and you're paying for an attorney at all this. So it's costing you money that and time and heartache when on your search for justice, and to have your ex-husband's name honored in the way it should be for dying in the line of duty and serving his community for almost 20 years.
Correct.
I want to follow this case with you. Please let me know how it shakes out, and I want you to know that you have the support of Blue Lives Radio and the listeners who are listening to this right now. I'm sure will share your outrage and send their thoughts and prayers as well.
Well, I truly appreciate that. It's good to hear that there are people on our side, basically because the people who are still working at the village of Glenview seem to be told they had to stay quiet about it. And, of course, they're worried for their own jobs.
You got some information from people that you're still friendly with that there has been some intimidation from upper-level administration to basically stand down?
Yes.
Well, that's even more disgusting.
We've been friends with these people for so long.
Yeah.
Right. And that they wanted to have a memorial or anything made for Owen at the police department, the officers had to pay for it with their own money. The village won't pay for it. The chief will not pay for it. The officers, even the new officers that never met Owen before, and he was a field training officer when he died as well, they have all passed the hat and been very kind at Christmas time and to make sure that I don't have the burden of only paying for Michael's gifts on my own, because they knew that his dad always went overboard at Christmas for him and bought him every Star Wars Lego, you know, action figure that there was made. So, but at the same time, those officers, maybe they don't feel any intimidation, the new ones, because a lot of them have never even met the chief. So, it's almost inconceivable
for me that a police chief would not know, especially we're talking about 40 officers on this agency.
Yeah, it's a fairly large agency. I mean, not. It should be bigger, you know, with the amount of people in the town, but it's not a 10-person agency.
Yeah,
but the chief is never there. The chief does not go in.
Well, that's a topic for another day.
Right.
But I want to thank you for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio and to tell us your story. And I'm glad to see that the Department of Justice has ruled in your favor. That's a massive win for you. And let's hope that that you prevail in the other aspects of this, and we see Owen Masterson's name carved in the granite of the Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Washington and the memorial in Springfield in the very near future.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It means a lot to my family and I.
Thank you.
If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you work extra jobs like many of us have to do, you're going to want to know about this company. It is an amazing company, and they're called Law Enforcement Specialists. Now, they're based out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the United States, and it's pretty unique. You know, we all have to face facts. That is, the police salaries basically suck, and you have to work extra jobs in order to either make ends meet or you want a few of the nicer things in life. Well, you know, sometimes you have to get them through your agency, but if you want to check with law enforcement specialists, there's a real good possibility that they can put you into extra duty assignments, and they work with your agency. It's wild. I've really never seen another company that does this. So check out their website. It's offdutypoliceofficers.com. Check that out again, offdutypoliceofficers.com. And you sign up with them, and they get you extra jobs. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Check them out. I know these people personally. They are great folks. They help law enforcement officers all over this country. They assist in charitable organizations, and they're just good people. Check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. Daytime!
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have three names to read. The first is Collections Operations Manager Christopher Todd Bacon of the United States Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection, Office of Intelligence. Collections Operations Manager Christopher Bacon was killed in a vehicle crash near the intersection of US 2 and County Road 46 near Crookston, Minnesota. His department vehicle struck the back of a tractor trailer at approximately 1 p.m. Manager Bacon was a U.S. Army veteran. He had served the United States Customs and Border Protection for 22 years, was assigned to the CBP Office of Intelligence Collection in Grand Forks, North Dakota. He is survived by his wife and four children. Collections Operations Manager Christopher Todd Bacon, United States Department of Homeland Security. End of watch. Thursday, June 7th, 2018. The next is Police Officer Charles G. Irvine, Jr. of the Milwaukee, Wisconsin Police Department. Police Officer Charles Irvine was killed in a single vehicle crash while pursuing another vehicle. His patrol car left the roadway, collided with a support wall of an overpass at the intersection of West Silver Spring Drive and North 76th Street. Officer Irvine suffered fatal injuries in the crash. His partner was transported to a local hospital with serious injuries. Officer Irvine served with the Milwaukee Police Department as a sworn officer for 2 years and was assigned to the 4th District. He had previously served with the department as a police aide for 2 years. Police Officer Charles G. Irvine, Jr., Milwaukee Police Department. End of watch, Thursday, June 7th, 2018. Sergeant Charles Salway of the New York State Police. Sergeant Charles Salway died as a result of cancer that he developed following his assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center site following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Sergeant Salloway had served with the New York State Police for 27 years. He survived by his wife and three sons, two daughters. His wife and one son both serve with the Saratoga County Sheriff's Office. Sergeant Charles Salloway New York State Police, End of Watch, Saturday, June 9th, 2018. May these officers rest in peace. I want to thank you for joining me this week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, on the America Out Loud Network. Each week, I try to bring you the police point of view with stories and articles and also with great interviews. I want to thank not only you for listening, but also those that make this possible, and that is Blue Light LLC, who does amazing intelligence software for law enforcement, and my friends over at the Law Enforcement Specialists. And I also want to just remind you about the book, The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. I would love for you to check it out on Amazon.com, read it, and I'd love for you to review it as well. So check it out. The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People on Amazon.com. See you next week.